Hello, and welcome to the Autodidactic Podcast with your host, Rick Dearman.
Hello, and welcome to the Autodidactic Podcast, Season 2, Episode 8. This episode is also delayed this week because, for a simple reason, I hadn't yet finished the autobiography of this week's featured autodidactic. This week I'll be looking at a modern autodidactic, Richard Phillips Feynman. Richard Feynman won the Nobel Prize in Physics in 1965 and assisted in the development of the atomic bomb during World War II. He also became known to the public in the 1980s as a member of the Rogers Commission, the panel that investigated the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster. Along with his work in theoretical physics, Feynman has been credited with pioneering the field of quantum computing and the introduction of the concept of nanotechnology. Richard Feynman was also often referred to as the Great Explainer due to his ability to make complex topics understood. Richard Feynman was born the 11th of May 1918 in New York and died in 15th February 1988 in Los Angeles, California. Feynman's parents were Melville Feynman and Lucy Phillips. His father was born into a Jewish family in Belarus and immigrated to the U.S. when he was 5 years old. Lucille Phillips was born in the United States into another Jewish family of Polish immigrants. They were married in 1917 and moved to Manhattan before Lucille gave birth to Richard in 1918. Melville Feynman was a mediocre businessman, but also had a keen interest in science, which he had never had an opportunity to study. Melville did all he could to interest Richard in science throughout his childhood. Richard Feynman had two siblings, a brother who died when he was just 4 weeks old, and his sister Joan, who was born when Richard was 9 years old. The family moved several times during these years, but when Richard was 10, they settled in Far Rockaway. Melville Feynman didn't push Richard into science. His approach was much more intuitive and subtle. He never taught facts so much as questions. He encouraged young Richard to identify not what he knew, but rather what he did not know. And this is the essence of Richard Feynman's style of understanding. By absolutely asking what his ignorance consisted of, he freed himself from conventional wisdom. Richard learned a great deal of science from the Encyclopedia Britannica and taught himself elementary mathematics before he encountered it at school. He also set up a laboratory in his home, where he experimented with electricity. In particular, he wired circuits with light bulbs, he invented a burglar alarm, and he took radios apart to repair damaged circuits. When he entered Far Rockaway High School, his interests were almost entirely in mathematics and science. He enjoyed recreational mathematics, from which he derived a great deal of pleasure. When Feynman was 15, he had taught himself trigonometry, advanced algebra, infinite series, analytic geometry, and both differential and integral calculus. As a young man in school, he found someone who would perhaps be the single most important person in his life, Arlene Greenbaum. After leaving high school, he applied to several universities. It was difficult for him to find a place, even with his obvious gifts. Although his grades in mathematics and science were outstanding, he had performed less well in other subjects. There was also the problem that he was a Jew, and in the United States at the time there were quotas on the number of Jews that they admitted into a university. Finally, he was accepted by the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or MIT. He entered MIT in 1935, and after 4 years of study, obtained his Bachelor's of Science degree in 1939. He went there to study mathematics, and although he found the courses easy, he became increasingly worried by the abstraction and lack of application. His mathematic lecturers presented him with a view that one did mathematics for its own sake. So Feynman changed courses, taking electrical engineering. And very quickly he changed again, this time moving into physics. The physics course that Feynman took at MIT was not the standard one. He took Introduction to Theoretical Physics, a class intended for graduate students in his second year. There was no course on quantum mechanics, a topic that Feynman was very keen to study. So together with a fellow undergraduate, T.A. Welton, he began to read the available text in the spring of 1936. Near the end of his time at MIT, he began to think about studying his doctorate. And since he had been so happy at MIT and also believed it would be a leading institution, he approached the head of physics, John Slater, and requested to stay on for the PhD course. Slater told him that for his own good, he had to move, and he suggested Princeton. Feynman was accepted by Princeton. His doctoral work at Princeton was supervised by John Wheeler. He then went on to develop a new approach to quantum mechanics using the principle of least action. He received his doctorate from Princeton in 1942, but before this time the United States had entered World War II. During this time of his life, he became engaged to marry Arlene, which they would do after completion of his PhD. However, Arlene at one point started to display serious symptoms of some sort of illness. After some time, she was positively diagnosed with tuberculosis and was not expected to live many more years. Richard decided then and there that the only right thing for him to do was to marry her as soon as possible. Although his family advised against it because of his unfinished PhD, the two were married in a simple civil ceremony. Feynman worked on the atomic bomb project at Princeton University between 1941 and 42, and then at Los Alamos in 1943 and 1945. Feynman began to work on the Manhattan Project at Princeton, developing a theory of how to separate uranium-235 from uranium-238, while his thesis supervisor, Wheeler, went to Chicago to work with Fermi on the first nuclear reactor. Feynman went to the newly constructed Los Alamos site to work on the atomic bomb project, and his remarkable ability soon led him to be appointed as head of the theoretical division. Arlene died in 1945, just before the first test of the bomb. After World War II, in the autumn of 1945, Feynman was appointed as the professor of theoretical physics at Cornell University. In 1950, Feynman accepted a position as the professor of theoretical physics at the California Institute of Technology. Since he had already planned a sabbatical leave before receiving the offer, he was able to arrange to spend the first 10 months of his new appointment in Brazil, and he remained at Caltech for the rest of his career. Feynman's main contribution was to quantum mechanics, following on from the work of his doctoral thesis. He introduced diagrams, now called Feynman diagrams, that are graphical analogs of mathematical expressions needed to describe the behavior of systems of interacting particles. He was awarded the Nobel Prize in 1965. In early 1979, Feynman's health had deteriorated, and he had surgery for stomach cancer. This was successful, and his doctors believed he would not suffer a recurrence. His final major task was as a member of the committee set up to investigate the cause of the explosion of the Space Shuttle Challenger on Tuesday, the 28th of January, 1986. It was very difficult for Feynman, since throughout the investigation his health was deteriorating. Near the end of 1987, cancer was found again in his abdomen. Luckily for us autodidactics, Richard Feynman left us the details of his learning methods, and we can adopt these practices ourselves. And while he didn't leave a step-by-step guide to his methods, they can be taken from his works and autobiographies. Richard Feynman had cultivated a habit of deliberate learning where he used to connect what he knew with what he did not know. And Feynman started to write down every topic that was important for him to know, which he had no knowledge of. He kept a notebook for this purpose, which he called the Notebook of Things I Don't Know. The Feynman learning technique has been studied and produced by many biographers, and while many will list the steps slightly differently, they are mostly the same. The basic steps are: Step 1, write down the topic to study. Step 2, teach the topic. Step 3, review what you don't know. Step 4, explain the topic to someone who knows nothing about the subject, such as a child. In step 1, selecting the concept to study compels you to be intentional about what you don't know. It also forces you to choose a topic that's small enough that could reasonably fit on one page of a notebook. In step 2, true understanding requires a more active process like teaching. Start out by formally teaching yourself. Write out a summary in your own words without looking at your notes, or explain it to yourself out loud. Then take it to the next level by teaching other people. Teaching initiates a feedback loop where critiques and questions can help us learn and sharpen our own thinking. When working in Brazil, teaching at a university, he discovered that students could memorize the terms and phrases in a textbook, which would be on the exam, but didn't understand the principles behind the terms. Feynman realized people can trick themselves into believing they understand something more than they truly do. These Brazilian students could quote the textbook, but couldn't explain or give examples. When you have to truly explain something, whether through writing or aloud, you encounter the holes in your reasoning and the white spaces in your knowledge. Think of writing and teaching as a process to obtain understanding, not something you do once when you already understand. When gaps in our knowledge arise and our explanations aren't quite right, revisiting our primary and secondary sources can help solidify what we're learning. Getting it right will likely take several iterations, and that's a good thing, because the more you refine your explanations, the more your understanding will deepen. Step 2 and 3 are linked. Review the explanation that you came up with and pinpoint the areas where you were not clear or you felt your explanation was shaky, and then return to your source notes and better your understanding. Practice step 2 again with your new and revised notes. And step 4 is to explain this to a child. In order to do this, you must simplify the terms you use, remove any jargons, and use simple words and phrases. Science is often filled with complex terms, and Feynman diagrams became valuable to people who were struggling to teach and to the people who were struggling to understand. His charts were able to explain simply things that other scientists took hours to lecture students on in an attempt to teach them. This search for visual representations and simplification also increases your understanding. Using analogies when teaching forces you to meet listeners where they are in terms of their understanding and relate something they already know to the new concept you're teaching. It's easy enough to commit terms to memory and repeat them back when prompted, but memorization is not understanding. So those are the basic 4 steps of the Feynman learning technique. You can learn these 4 steps in seconds and apply them in minutes, but the steps are relatively unimportant. What Richard Feynman had and what you need to cultivate is a constant need to question, which was instilled into him by his father Melville. In fact, you can further reduce the Feynman learning technique down to just simply asking what you don't know, then finding that out and repeating it. Well, that's it for this week. If you enjoy the show, please give a rating on the platform you're using to listen, and please share the podcast with friends and family who might be interested. Also, please feel free to email me at rick@autodidactic.info or leave feedback on the website autodidactic.info.
Thank you for listening to the Autodidactic Podcast with your host, Rick Dearman. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider giving a donation via PayPal. Thank you very much, and see you again next time.